I'd like to call the meeting to order.
I thought that was funding additional.
We didn't quite have a quorum, but we're going to get started. Maybe we do have a quorum. Can't hear?
Karen, you need to talk louder.
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
All right. Good. Welcome, everybody. We're starting the session back with the two bills today, and welcome, everybody. Really nice to have you with us. We have one new staff person, Harriet. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just introduce yourself briefly? And
sure. My name is Harriet Hendricks. I'm new at Fiscal Analyst Department. That's it, I think. I don't know any other questions.
Welcome.
But thank you.
Thank you. We have a new page. There he is, Matt. Thank you, and he's bringing me a glass of water. I'm so grateful. Thank you. Okay. The first bill we have up today is Representative Dean's bill on mortgage foreclosure. Thank you so much. Establishing mediation. And why don't you go ahead and come up to the podium, Representative Dean. As you folks remember, this is not a new bill to this committee. We had a long hearing on it during the interim. He's done some quite a bit of work, might say a lot of work. And I was just talking with Representative Anderson. I want to make sure that you all understand the bill, and if we need to have a little testimony to do that, that's fine. I want to point out that this bill is going to go to four other committees from here, and we need to try to get it out of here a kind of reasonable amount today, so that we can, amount of time today, so that it can get on its way to the other committees. And also, we have a second bill with a lot of people here to testify on. That happens to be my bill on housing opportunities made equitable. So, Representative Dean, welcome to the committee. And if you'd like to present your bill, and we'll see what the committee has to say about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And is there a member that's willing to put forward the delete all amendment to E3?
Representative Fisher?
Yes.
Moves that that House File 1941... let's see, we have the word change now. Go to committee on... Yeah, we'll do that. Right, we'll do that. To the committee on civil law, is that correct? That's where it's going? Yeah, it's going to go to the committee on civil law. So we have to start, I believe, with your amendment. So, Representative Fisher, do you want to move that amendment?
I'll move the amendment.
D3 amendment? The amendment... Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, thanks. Just a quick question here. This is a substantive amendment, we believe. A lot of some changes, important changes. And did this meet your 24-hour requirement for being posted?
I'm sure it did. I'll ask my staff person here.
As the 24-hour rule is explained, it is received within the 24 hours and is as practicable to be posted. And so it met that criteria.
Well, Madam Chair, we didn't have access to this till the afternoon yesterday, and again, because of the changes made, we feel that it didn't meet the intent of giving us enough time to fully delve into this, and I just want to put that on the record, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson, I hope you'll have a chance to ask your questions and, you know, fully vet it, and the situation is that, as I mentioned, this is going to go through four other committees, and let's make sure that you feel comfortable today. I believe we did meet the intent of the 24-hour rule, so Representative Dean, why don't you go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As folks have known from the previous hearing that we had that was informational, that this is something that we've been working on for quite some time. The delete all amendment makes a few changes.
Is it on?
That's better.
Oh, my God. Am I going to have to present like this?
We're in close.
Madam Chair, you know, at the previous, we had some discussion and testimony regarding what this bill does as far as mediation. What it does is it sets up a mediation program for those about to enter into foreclosure, and ultimately requires that the lender as well as the homeowner go through a process of mediation that will be facilitated by the Office of Administrative Hearings to try to get that last resolution to try to work out something to avoid foreclosure. The delete all amendment makes some changes
Some, I would say, are not that significant. A few might be a little bit more substantive. The funding of this now will be coming from the general budget, so it won't be a fee attached to a mortgage or anything like that. So this will just be something that we as a state will help to fund the process. As we've been working on it the past few weeks, we've understood the need to wrap into it, and I will be the first to admit that it's not fully wrapped in yet, the role of mortgage foreclosure prevention counselors as part of the initial step that would take place prior to the lender as well as the homeowner going for mediation. So there has been some concerns raised that it takes that process and in many ways lessens it, and has never been the intent to do that. As a matter of fact, I think it would be great if we can avoid a majority of mediations because the homeowners are able to work with the counselor and work with their lender so that they can work out something to avoid mediation. So that's a significant piece of the bill that may have changed. As you know, we also have subsequent lien holders as part of this as well, which I know has been met with some controversy, but we also feel it critical at this point that subsequent lien holders be involved in this process so that a bank and a homeowner don't resolve something through mediation and then have a subsequent lien holder coming back 6 months, a year, or a year and a half, or 2 years from now saying, hey, wait a minute, I wasn't there. I didn't necessarily agree to this. So that's the substantive part of the bill.
Representative Dean, let me just pause for a moment. Sure. The courtesy we always give to authors is to adopt their amendments. In this case, delete everything. The amendment will do that so that then we can have the discussion and the questions. Okay. So the amendment, the D3 amendment, is before us. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion is before us now. Did you complete your...
I think I tried to go through. I'm sorry, I've had bills in two other committee meetings, so I'm trying to be as brief as possible.
Okay.
Maybe not a good idea with this bill, but so ultimately, what it does is it requires a lender, a bank, or a credit union, if they have participated in more than 125 foreclosures in the previous year, to go through the period of go through the process of mediation for these particular mortgages. And in order to then proceed with the foreclosure, they need to receive a certificate or affidavit of participation. participation that is was I'm drawing a blank right now. Sam.
5.1.07
Good faith.
If we're going to have a little help, why don't you come on up and
why don't you come down,
introduce yourself, and we'll get you on the record here.
So good faith participation.
And you're definitely allowed to have
expert
counsel with you. Welcome to the committee. Will you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you. My name's Sam Bolstead. I'm one of the drafters that's been helping Representative Raymond Dean with the bill.
Right. So the lender would need to receive a certification of participation, good faith participation, in which they then could move forward with their foreclosure. In the event that there's been no other resolution, that was a workout, whether it's a loan modification, whether it's a short sale, whether it's some other type of workout, cash for keys, then the bank would be able to proceed with their foreclosure.
Okay. All right. Questions? I know that Representative Anderson indicated, you told me ahead of time you had some questions. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean, my two main concerns with the bill pertain to how second liens will be notified or handled if this bill becomes law. How would they all be notified? And could a mediator, in fact, nullify a lien put on by the IRS or federal government or the state of Minnesota? Would they have that kind of power, and would that stand up? And talk about that one first, please.
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, to your point, I'm not an attorney, so I won't, you know, speak to issues of laws. What we do have is that the mediator can void a lien in the event that the subsequent lien holder is not present or participating in the mediation. If I had to surmise, I would think it would be rather difficult for a mediator in the state of Minnesota voiding a lien that was put on by the Internal Revenue Service.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Well, that's a major point of concern, again, by how those parties would be treated under this law. My other concern has to do with counselors, and we heard in the meeting last time we heard your bill that they seem to be doing a very good job with working with parties to try to modify loans and such to keep them in their homes. And as I understand, there's a lot of concern right now from that group that they're kind of being put out of this process, and the mediators will take over the role the counselors played. And there is a great deal of concern from those folks. Could you talk about that and tell us how they will still be an integral part of this process?
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I have heard their concerns. It was never the intent of this bill to supplant existing mortgage foreclosure prevention counseling through a mediation process. It was to be an additive process. So my understanding in this language, although we don't explicitly call it out, we do intend counselors to play a role. And I'm currently working on some language that would allow even the mediation to be extended out in the event that the counselor is working with the homeowner as well as the bank, so that period of time, which is currently 60 days, could be extended.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Just one more question. You talk about this process requiring one mediation session, but on page 9, line 16, it says, if a subsequent session may be needed, is determined, I guess, by the mediator. So saying this would be just one session, there's kind of an out there. Is that correct, that there could be more than one session if it's deemed necessary?
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the point about the counselor versus the mediation, Representative Dean, can you just explain, you know, as they're going through the counseling process, if it's determined that they don't have the fiscal ability at all to move forward with that loan, even through modification, is the mediation process going to be mandatory even in those cases where it's already been determined that would not be in the best interest of the loan, the mortgagee?
Representative Dean?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, mediation would always be an option for a homeowner, and what I would say to your question, I believe that counselors working with a homeowner would help a homeowner to see and understand that maybe that there really is no way for them to continue to stay in their home, and if they can't reach an agreement with the bank, you know, it's quite possible that the homeowner will then opt out of the mediation process. But this allows a homeowner to move forward through that mediation process if they so choose.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps a better process would be to go through the counseling first and determine whether or not mediation would be beneficial or not. Just a suggestion as you're putting these pieces together. Because as I recall, when we had the informational hearing, roughly about 50%, I don't remember the exact number, but quite a few of the people that went through the counseling services actually were able to stay in their homes and were successful. And you know, it's my concern that if we spend all of that time, effort, and expense on all parties involved going through a counseling process, and it's determined by those people at the table at that time that, you know, it's really in their best interest to move ahead and not keep, not trying to hold on to that mortgage, that the mandatory mediation might not be as helpful as we would see at that time. I would just make that as a suggestion to you to really work through the counseling process, as it's been so successful with the previous testimony that we had in the informational hearing, before we go to the next stage. Thank you.
Representative Dean? Okay. Representative Hertas?
Was there a response?
I think you were next. She indicated she was done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean, it seems as though this legislation is broad and sweeping, perhaps more targeted at institutional lenders. But how do you address the concern or that I would have regarding non-traditional lenders, such as snowbirds, for example, who might hold a junior lien or second mortgage on a property and are across the country and maybe absent for a few months, unaware or unknowledgeable that the first mortgage is being foreclosed? How do you justify not being present and the penalty of losing all of your interest in property that's been secured as a penalty for not showing up? How do you address this problem?
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative. To that I would say that the foreclosing entity is responsible to notify every subsequent lien holder in the process, and that subsequent lien holder would then have the opportunity to participate. There's nothing specifically in this bill that says that a snowbird that, say, lived down in Texas would have to fly here to participate directly face-to-face in that process. So there would be opportunity for conferencing and other types of situations where they could participate. Yeah, so telephonically, it is certainly a possibility.
Representative Hertas?
The second part might have to do with how do you see this affecting in any way somebody who isn't a fee holder but is having their contract canceled under a contract for deed?
Representative Dean?
You know, I believe that that's a different process than foreclosure, so I don't think that that would apply here, although, again, this isn't my area of expertise, but I'm guessing that because it is a contract for deed and it's not a mortgage, it would be treated differently.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Representative Dean, wouldn't it make sense to have this education process or counseling process in advance of taking out a mortgage, making it a prerequisite to have the disclosure notice that mediation exists, that the consumer, through provision of law, could require mediation or could waive mediation at the beginning of a contract rather than after the fact? It just seems like this is really onerous, and with regard to Representative Anderson's question regarding follow-up mediation sessions, it's really an imperative to save from depletion real property by having indefinitely extended mediation meetings, which can be rescheduled and rescheduled and rescheduled with an open-ended thing where mediation could go on for 18 months. The risk to somebody who's providing capital for consumers to buy a home, this is really unnecessary in many regards, because during that same time you've probably read articles or heard about stripping. Depletion of property and destroying an asset is how these things happen when the foreclosure process isn't reasonable. And I think you need to come back with some type of an amendment to this legislation that is much more prescriptive in how many additional mediations can happen and the time frame in which mediation ends. Otherwise, what you're doing is you're driving the capital market. We all want people to own homes. It makes stable communities. We want home ownership to be high. And Minnesota has a history of having a very high 60% of the population are homeowners. And with that said, trying to increase opportunities to be a homeowner means you're invested in your community. It means you're committed to a mortgage. It means you're committed to working. It means you're committed to having shelter for your family. All of these things are good for our society. But if you do this, you're going to start to limit and drive capital out of the state and drive down the percentage of home ownership. You're going to make the cost of money more expensive for those who need credit. So I'd like you to consider that. I think everybody wants to make sure that all options and negotiations are exhausted before somebody is asked to surrender the keys. But this seems extraordinarily onerous, and I think you will see less people in the mortgage market in Minnesota. I could go back in history and just cite, for example, before we lifted the usury law on mortgage rates, there was a 4% usury law, maximum mortgage rate, to buy a home. During the early inflation of the 70s, all of the mortgage capital, nobody could buy a home. And especially baby boomers, like myself, who were looking to get mortgages, couldn't find the money because the money was in other states. When Minnesota lifted the usury law, suddenly baby boomers were flooded with capital available to buy homes. And many of us had those opportunities to grow and build equity, and that's just the way the market works. So while we want to protect consumers, which is an admirable goal, we also need to protect opportunities for consumers, not to the detriment of others, by making legislation such as this that is going to limit or restrict the supply of capital to buy homes. I would further point out that when you restrict capital available to buy homes, you also drive the price of homes down. You create less demand. In every case where the FHA had raised loan limits, home sales continued to rise. It's just the way the market works. So sometimes good intentions have bad consequences. And I'd like you to think about that, and I would really like to see some improvement in this mediation clause where there's got to be an end to the process without it going on indefinitely. This leaves it kind of open. And I think that's a concern for me.
Thank you. Representative Green?
Can I respond? There were a few questions in there, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative, so two things. I think a person buying a home is not in a place to think about, do I need mediation or not? Anyone who's buying a home is believing that they're going to be in their home. They don't know what's going to happen from them 4 or 5 years from now, where they might come into difficulties that might impact them. So to that point, I would say I understand what you're saying, but I think anybody who's buying a home is optimistic about their future, and they think that things will be good for a while. I think the mediator could set a subsequent mediation meeting. I don't think that's going to be common practice. I think that will be unusual situations where the bank and the homeowner will probably agree to come back to the table for something. So I mean, to your point, I would say absolutely this. There's no way that this is going to have 24 mediations and be strung out over 24 months by the homeowner to keep themselves in their home longer. I mean, ultimately, that's the job of the mediator, to give the bank their certificate of acting in good faith. In regard to the number of homeowners in the state of Minnesota, there's a huge disparity between the number of people of color that own homes and the number of people that look like you and me that own homes. And in the foreclosure crisis from 2007 through 2010, nearly 50% of the the asset wealth of African-American Minnesotans were stripped out of the community and stripped out of their homes. So that's just a few things beyond, you know, the cost of money impacting the ability of home prices. When you go on a block and there's six or seven foreclosed homes, that also affects the impact on the cost of those properties. So to your points, I would just like to address that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean, I was looking in here, and under mediator, it says that they'll be selected by the Office of Administrative Hearings. Who will the mediators be, and what qualifications will they have to be a mediator for foreclosures?
Could you reference the
2.25.
2.25.
Representative Dean.
Subsection 6.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Green, yes, the Office of Administration will be the entity that determines who those mediators are. They currently have administrative law judges and mediators that already participate, so it would be within their jurisdiction to determine who those mediators are.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm going to have to ask you to get closer to that microphone because I didn't really hear everything that you said, but but they're going to be an administrative law judge. Does the administrative law judge have any training in foreclosure mediation is my question.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, I believe that OAH, and I've had conversations, will train their mediators to enter into this process of being a mediator for foreclosure. As of right now, there is not a process by which they will train them, and I am confident that should this bill become law, that they will go through that process of training those individuals.
The other question I have is mediation involves working from both sides, and when you're basically removing someone's responsibility to pay and from another entity, and you're going to have one mediation session. Do you really think that's realistic to think that you're going to bring two parties together and believe that there's going to be one mediation session with someone who may or may not be trained properly in this area and come out with a result?
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Green. First off, people that are in foreclosure often aren't just not trying to pay their home mortgage. As a matter of fact, many people that are currently in foreclosure continue to make payments on their homes. So I would just like to point that out. Second off, the process by which the mediator will work is they will receive the information from the lender as well as information from the homeowner. They will not be going into a mediation session without any knowledge or understanding. And I'm confident that they will be trained. And unlike your question that whether they're trained or not trained, I would say that they will be trained and they will enter into that. So I'm confident in their ability to go through this process. And I think that homeowners that are going through mediation want to stay in their homes. And I believe that lenders that will participate in the mediation, if there is a way of working something out so that they don't foreclose on the property, will also be in their best interest.
Representative Zuros, and before I call on you, I just wanted to point out, I mentioned this earlier, and I don't know if everybody was here, but we have two bills on the agenda today. And this bill did have an interim hearing with some major changes, so we're happy to go through the bill and answer the questions. I do want to try to vote it out of here, if we can, by about quarter after, so we'll have time for the others, maybe stretching it to 20 after. And then reminding everybody, this goes through four other committees, and some of the questions are very good questions, but they don't have to all be handled here, and some of them have to do with some of the other committees' jurisdictions as well. Representative Zuros.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. And yeah, I completely understand the previous hearings, and I think they were pretty helpful when we talked about the foreclosure process as it currently is. And one of the testifiers talked about the current process using the counseling service now, and they gave some statistics about the success rate for the home ownership center in the homeownership counseling in Minnesota, around 37%, I want to say, and that was really close to what one of your testifiers talked about on some other states or on a national level, what statistically the results are through mediation. And so I'm wondering if we have a system in Minnesota that's really been a leader as far as the home foreclosure crisis, where we've had model legislation with our homeownership counseling that's been copied state after state with such great success. Why would we want to disregard all of that and go to a new process that now would involve OAH with an unknown amount of money spent to go to a new setting where we don't know what the success will be? But in other states, the success for mediation is slightly lower than what our success rate has been for counseling. So I'm just wondering if you have a reaction to that or an explanation why we do that.
Representative Dean?
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, some states that do mediation have much, much higher percentage, and some, of course, have low percentage. So that speaks to the issue of the quality of the mediation program. To your point about doing away with home ownership centers, their mortgage foreclosure prevention counseling, this bill, when it gets to its final draft, when you'll have the opportunity to vote on the floor, will have addressed that. The intent is not to do away with mortgage foreclosure counseling. The intent is to have mortgage foreclosure counseling as an integral part of mediation. And why that is important is we can't have on one side a mortgage foreclosure prevention process, which is initiated by the lenders through the HOC Center, and then another process over here, which is the mediation process by which through OAH will go through that process. This is something that has to be knitted together. Mm-hmm. Homeowners struggle a lot understanding what happens through the foreclosure process, and the goal is to try to bring these two pieces together to take what might be 37%, 50%, depending on how you're basing those numbers, and actually increase that another 10 or 15%. So, to your point.
Thank you. Follow up? Okay. Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. I'm wondering, since this is the Housing Finance and Policy Committee, I realize that there's some really important spot at the end that's three dots with no money. And since this is Housing Finance and Policy, I'm wondering if we're going to get around to a fiscal note or why there hasn't been one requested yet. And when we're going to get that information, because that would be beneficial on the Housing Finance and Policy Committee.
Good point. Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, we have had discussions with the analysts, and we don't know what that fiscal note is yet. We believe it's somewhere. We believe it's somewhere between probably $1 and $2 million.
Okay. And then one.
Representative Zerwas.
Madam Chair, a question for you. Since there's been so many substantial changes from the original bill to the DE amendment, I'm wondering if we could open it up. The Minnesota Home Ownership Center is here, and perhaps they'd like to make a comment on the bill. Otherwise, I know some financial institutions are here, and they've expressed interest in talking about the impact that this would have on second liens and the drastic reduction in second liens or home equity lines of credit being issued in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, so here's the situation. I can see that, you know, there could be a lot of discussion about this. There are four other committees this is going through, where there will be more discussions, particularly about the financial parts, but also an opportunity for all these folks to work with Representative Dean. They have met with him. We have heard from them before. We heard from the financial institutions, and I know that he has made such diligent efforts to meet with them. I don't want to spend the rest of this hour that we have here on this bill. So I would really ask members and on both sides of the aisle to allow this bill to move out of this committee today. Representative Dean, I think you've heard some very serious mm-hmm. and good questions. We all think they're important. And so I would like to not begin a whole string of testimony. I think you have done a very good job in asking those questions. You've done an excellent job. You know, if we can agree on that, I would like it to go forward.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Representative Zerwas.
I think I know the home ownership counselors still have significant concern, and
yes.
And I know that they've expressed interest in discussing the credit union. Yeah. Folks have also expressed interest. There's a lot of people really nervous about this bill, and especially the DE amendment that's moving forward. And we've had less than 24 hours to review it. I think there's a lot of concerns. I understand that some folks have a pressing engagement to get to, but...
Representative Zerus, I think I need to correct you on that. I was just talking to my staff here. It did go out right after noon. Yeah, so it was posted in 24-hour rule. I realize that's just the 24-hour rule, and you didn't have days and days to look at it, and I apologize that, but we have been trying to give Representative Dean every opportunity to meet with all of those constituents that you and I, everybody, want to have input on in this.
Ma'am Chair, I would feel more comfortable if we were able to pick this up at another meeting, give people that have a housing stake in this an opportunity to testify to the Housing Committee.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hertas, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two comments. One, thank you for your interest in moving this process along, but I would remind you that we've been told that the hard work is supposed to be done in the committees, and none of us are necessarily members of these other four committees, so there's still work to be done here. Representative Dean, on page 10, line 10.21, subdivision 2, failure to participate in good faith. My central concern about the language in this paragraph of your proposed legislation is that there are no determined thresholds, no definition of what constitutes failure of good faith. And what I have a concern for here, again, are the folks who we're trying to help the most to make credit available to them. And I could see the home equity line in Minnesota completely going away as an option if this type of language is left in there, where a lender is able to extend credit to somebody in a home equity line, which might help them through a time of unemployment or a time of difficulty or a time of being hospitalized, where they need additional credit to make their house payment. And to find a situation like this where arbitrarily a mediator can choose to decide that there's been no good faith, that I could see that as just drying up the home equity line of credit for most consumers. The second component of this is for some of those individuals or people who are willing to loan money and take a second mortgage or equity in a home as collateral, oftentimes those instruments, those second mortgages or those pieces of paper are packaged up or oftentimes pledged as collateral somewhere else. And so what you're ignoring here is the secondary market of that paper. And I don't know if I'm confusing you by that, but if I held a second mortgage on your home, and if I needed credit, I could take that second mortgage and I could pledge that as collateral to get some of the money that I advanced to you, or to use that money to further help someone else. Okay? So what you start here is really a domino effect of suggesting that someone's interest in contract law can simply be voided after the fact because of a very vague, actually there's no definitions with what constitutes failure to participate in good faith. That is pretty arbitrary and pretty capricious on the part of the mediator. And who would ever want to extend credit or secure a second mortgage on property with that type of a provision? I think this is bad for consumers all around.
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Hertas, if you actually turn to page 8, lines 8.17, and continue on to page 9 through 9.2, it does really define what it would be to fail to act in good faith. So I believe we do a pretty good job of outlining that, and I would also let you know that the Office of Administrative Hearings will also, you know, create a set of metrics that will be part of the process for lenders acting in good faith as well as for homeowners acting in good faith.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out, Representative Dean, but that still will make it more difficult with all of these provisions to extend credit as in the secondary market. And I think it's going to work to the detriment of many consumers who rely on a home equity line of credit to maybe pay for college education, maybe to buy that car, do some of the things. The home mortgage interest deduction is still an interest deduction that's allowed under federal law. And you'll see that market start to dry up as some of the provisions of this penalty on the part of a mediator. You could still require all of those things, but the provision of extinguishing interest in real property is incredibly onerous. It's like nationalizing things. It's just confiscation. That's just wrong.
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, Representative Hertas, I will take your comment, and I'm assuming that when you meant that would be nationalization, that's something that you would not prefer.
Correct.
Okay. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been watching this bill from the beginning. Ray and I have sat down and had many long conversations, and what I appreciate about what Ray's bringing to the table is a good faith effort to try to do the right thing and find some ground in which the one area I think that didn't get covered that we'd hoped to be covered last time. I will say that in its current form, if it was on the floor, I would not vote for it. But I do believe that he is on the right path to this. And I do think that with the next four committees and the unfortunate reality of our timelines, we do need to vote this out of committee and keep the process going, knowing full well that we'll all have the opportunity to reassess as we go along and find our way as it makes its way to the floor. And I have faith in my experience in knowing Representative Dean and talking to many of the stakeholders that there's still much work to be done, and that work will get done. I know those other committees are going to be very much an arduous climb in some ways, and I have confidence that either we will get it right or we're not going to do it. But I want to ensure that the process continues, and so I hope that we will take a vote and move on to our next line item. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to concur with Representative Isaacson on some of the things that he had stated. And mostly, I believe the bill is in good shape. The intent is right there. And I think actually what I'd like to see addressed would be in a different committee, which would be defining what banks in Minnesota, Dodd-Frank, should have the laws that we passed on a federal level applicable to. When we're dealing with our smaller credit unions and banks in greater Minnesota, at least from the meetings I've had on a session, it seems that if they're under a certain dollar amount, I would hope we could find some way to get them out of some of the compliance and fine structures that were more designed for banks like Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank. But with that, I'd also like to thank you, because some of those larger banks do deserve legislation like this. For the past few years, past many years, of what I believe was deceptive lending behavior. So I would love to see it move forward today, and hopefully we can address those other issues in another committee.
Thank you. Members, I just want to make a brief statement myself, which is I appreciate all the concern that's been expressed here, and I respect, you know, the different opinions that have been brought forward. I remember when we brought this bill forward and you brought it forward the first time, we are facing a very serious crisis. Home foreclosure is an extremely, extremely difficult problem for so many communities, especially low-income communities, communities of color, some of our rural communities. So we are going to take a vote. I hope that you all will continue to engage with Representative Dean. And Representative Fisher, your motion is before us that the House file, as amended, be... excuse me, I got to consult here. What do you say? Okay, well, we don't. We've changed the rules a little bit. We're not. We're referring it to the Committee on Civil Law. We're not making a specific recommendation. That's the new rules, committee members. We don't say whether or not we're recommending it to pass anymore. That's just the new rules of the House. So, we renew your motion, Representative Fisher. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
The motion passes. You're on your way to four more committees, Representative
Dean.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Members, we have a second bill before us. I'm going to ask Representative Bly to take over the seat. Mr. Chairman?
Oh, that's
okay. Representative Clark, would you
thank
like
you,
to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and audience. I'd like to... we're going to get started here. We're going to talk about the bill that I have the privilege of bringing forward called Housing Opportunities Made Equitable. Let me just give you a little background on this. You may remember out of this committee, we passed a bill last year, our Housing Finance Agency bill, that included in it language that we asked the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to address the serious problem of racial disparities in terms of home ownership here in the state of Minnesota. So the bill that you have before you put some actual finance into that $50 million, and we'd be working with the communities, the councils of color, to make sure that we address that issue across the board of all of our communities of color, our low-income people. So, members, we're going to hear from a number of folks who've been working on this, and I'll try to cut my time right now, except to say that we have a huge crisis. Minnesota has the worst racial disparities in housing ownership of any other state in the whole nation. That's just not okay. And even though we've got some progress being made with our Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, we need to do better. So I'm going to, Mr. Chairman, ask that I'd like to move House File 2112. It's going to actually not leave the committee today because we do not have a target, but I'd like to move it for discussion purposes and then allow our witnesses to testify. And when we get our target, we'll come back and have a vote on the actual, whether it leaves this committee to Ways and Means.
Representative Clark moves to lay over the bill until we have...
That's the final motion, yes.
Thank you.
I have a number of witnesses who have come forward to testify.
All right. Would you introduce yourself for the record?
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I do have some handouts for the committee.
Okay.
I'm Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the Interim Executive Director of MICA, which is the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, and I'm President and CEO of Integrated Community Solutions, also with the National Coalition for the Homeless. You may have seen me before this committee many times. I'm the retired Executive Director of Elam Transitional Housing for 30 years. We support House File 2112. At MICA, we believe that we should live our faith every day in our communities, and that means to treat others the same way that we would want to be treated, and with the opportunities, justice, equity, and mercy. In the handout you have, you'll see the number of different organizations that are supporting House File 2112, and there's additional handouts over for the audience over at on this side. As you just heard in the mediation discussion, is that during the mid-2000s, we had some really challenges within our banking and financing. I think some mistakes were made about how loose we made rules. poor choices by people, lack of understanding of financing and home ownership, and a recession. And over 150,000 homes have been foreclosed on over the last 9 years. Now, that's not including the folks that received the mediation or the counseling services through the Home Ownership Center, which did a great job. We had 150,000 homes, your neighbors, be foreclosed on. So if you take a look at the next sheet in there, you will see that we have this incredible gap in home ownership, and the table there talks through that gap. You can clearly see that those of us that are Caucasian or white, which I am, that we have a home ownership rate of 77%. You can see the home ownership rate then for each of the different populations: American Indian 46.5, Asian 51.9, Asian 58.6, Black 23%, Black U.S. born 26%, Hispanic Latino 43.5%. So even though we are one of the highest home ownership states in the country, we have the greatest disparity of people of color and American Indians in their ability to have that American dream, which many of us, and maybe all of us around this table, have. How this bill came to being, the African American Leadership Forum, which is made up of 1,200 African Americans, came to, and Build Wealth Minnesota, which you'll testify next, requested MICA to work with them in introducing legislation to address the disparity of home ownership for African Americans. As we developed the bill, it was introduced late in the session last year. Representative Clark introduced that. She added, as she mentioned, the diversity disparity language to the omnibus bill, which you passed. And then we met with Commissioner Tingerthal from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and her staff. And then you can see in the next two sheets, you have the Affordable Housing Plan, which is a plan that the Housing Finance Agency has to put together each year on how it's going to use its dollars. And then a second plan. The second page talks about this beginning of a plan that the Housing Finance Agency took from our discussions about the home bill to begin to use some of their resources that they had available to immediately begin this program in 2014. It's a targeted mortgage opportunity program and the enhanced financial opportunity for training, enhanced financial capacity initiative. So basically, from the work that we began doing in this committee last year, we're already seeing a very small program start out in the Housing Finance Agency. It's $10.5 million, and it will help basically create 44 loans, and it'll help to do intensive home ownership training for 167 households. Now, that's not to replace the home stretch or what the Home Ownership Center is doing. This is for folks that need to have a much more extensive home ownership training than less than a year. They're going to need more than a year to get ready to get into home ownership or make a decision that home ownership is not the right decision for them to make at this time. Because a lot of people got into very, very bad loans in 2005, 2006, 2007 because they didn't understand the financing market, as many of you have talked about very eloquently earlier on the previous bill. So we want to make sure that people are really getting it. So some of the discussion we've had about the amounts of money that we're talking about in this bill is somewhere, you know, potentially upwards of $50 million, which is the bill that was originally, the language that was originally brought to MICA last year. If you look at that final piece then in your packet, this is what the Federal Reserve Bank, Minneapolis, is saying that we need to do. And looking at African Americans, Latinos, and whiter Caucasians in regards to home ownership. If we were just to address the disparity by 10%, we would have to increase home ownership by 7,349 for African American and 3,923 for Latinos. That's more than we have in the entire Housing Finance Agency budget for first-time home buyer. That would only be about a fifth of what we're going to do in 2015. So what we're talking about as far as resources is one more step to help address the disparity. But we're talking about an issue that's going to take significant amounts of resources to help bring people that are people of color and American Indians to the same level of home ownership and opportunity that many of us that are Caucasian around this table have had and have been able to develop great wealth. And I think some of the things that we need to understand is that by doing this, we do create stronger communities. We know that when there are foreclosures, that property values go down. we know that that properties get stripped after they've been foreclosed on and they're sitting vacant there for a while. We know that when, and you've already mentioned it, is that when you own a home, your community tends to be more stable. That's a value that we have. People are able to build wealth. That's how we build wealth in this country for most people. And I think the thing that we need to also understand is that we have a lot of investors that are absentee landlords that are buying up our foreclosed homes. So if we can help move some people of color and American Indians into home ownership, we are going to really help stabilize our communities, provide opportunities to people that have not had those opportunities in a new and different way.
Thank you.
I don't see any questions at the moment. Representative Clark, would it be your intent to hear all of the testifiers first?
If we can go through the list of witnesses, that would be great.
Okay, very good.
The time that's left.
Anne-Marie
Mr. David
Hill?
McGee would be the next. Oh, that's right. No, I think we're David. David McGee, and then I think after that.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair and Acting Chair, my name is David McGee, and I'm the Executive Director for Build Wealth Minnesota. And today I'm just going to tell you a little bit about this particular bill as it relates to how it works and how the initial bill is working in terms of the $50 million that we're requesting in this bill. This bill basically has three parts to it, and the first part is capacity. We have a number of organizations that have been doing some really good, sound work in creating opportunities for sustainable home ownership for people of color. Build Wealth being one of them. We have a two-year program, and it's a very long-term program that goes in and deals with some social issues as well as education issues, as well as financial education and literacy issues, as well as just basically educating families about the systems that are there to help them become sustainable homeowners and prepare for home ownership. We're asking for a portion of this $50 million, roughly about $2.5 million to go to several organizations that have a long-term track record and have been very effective in working with families. Build Wealth Minnesota being one, Clues is another who's in the audience today, Neighborhood Development Alliance and NIDA, they both work with the Latino community, Aurora St. Anthony, Camp for Fiscally Fit, Model Cities, the African Development Center, to name a few, are very effective organizations that are on the ground, in the roots, helping families to be sustainable homeowners, as well as helping them with educating them on being better renters as well. And so part of the money we're looking for is to engage and build a capacity of those organizations that already do a great work already to be able to do more work. Most of these organizations are helping hundreds of families, and they lack the capacity to really help these families. So it's really heavy lifting for these organizations. And so most of them are usually understaffed and are stretched very thin, and they probably could do a greater work in closing the disparity gap. The second part of this money is basically a revolving loan fund that was spoke about earlier, that Minnesota Housing has called an enhanced mortgage product. Many of the families are facing a number of barriers in getting into home ownership, and I heard some earlier discussion about credit being a barrier. A number of people have gone into foreclosure because they didn't understand the system of credit, and they didn't understand, they got into some early predatory products early on that were very high cost, and so it put them at a disadvantage and created some barriers for them. And so what this particular pool, not only educating them, we found a loan pool that would be revolving, a sustainable loan pool, where the servicing and the fees to this particular loan pool would go back into a pool of resources that would be redistributed annually to each of these organizations that have this track record of helping its people, thus being a very sustainable pool of resources. The particular pool, as you can see in the bill, would have the ability with the $50 million to bring in about $1.7 million to be distributed to these organizations to actually do the heavy lifting. The goal is to grow this loan fund over time. There's a third piece of this that Minnesota Housing has put into this. I heard some discussion about the secondary market and finding a place for loans once they're done. How do we keep this pool in a place where it can continue to grow? The secondary market is a very tough place right now. With the credit constraints right now, lenders are finding it extremely hard to lend to anyone, let alone people of color or anyone with credit barriers. And so Minnesota Housing has put in a self-insuring percentage of about 20% of this particular pool that would actually insure against any losses, thus making this later possibly palatable to a secondary market. We're looking for this to continue to go on. The bill of $50 million, we're looking for it to basically be broken down into $2.5 million to support the capacity of organizations that are already doing the work. We're looking at roughly $47,500,000 to go into a loan pool, which be about 250 houses that it should be able to help. And of that, there'd probably be a 10 to 20% of that particular amount that would also go into the self-insuring pool to kind of offset some of the risk for this particular pool. Thank you.
Thank you. And
thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I think one of the things that my witness just did here was help fill in the blanks, and maybe you could just go over those with us again. The lines on the second page, members, and I probably should have done that myself, but I'm just going to have him give that to you.
If you go to line 2.1, this particular pool, based on the servicing of these loans and the different fees that would be generated for originating, processing, and closing these loans, would be approximately $1.7 million. Mm-hmm. On line item number 2.3, we are looking at $2.5 million to be used to assist the families to attain the sustainable, affordable home ownership and rental units by educating these, assisting them with long-term financial education. And that information, basically, or that money would go to organizations that have a track record of doing so. We're not trying to recreate the wheel. We're trying to use that money to go to organizations that already have a track record, a proven track record of doing this. And line 2.8 would be the $4.75 million that would be used to develop, $47.5 million that would be used to develop this revolving loan fund, or in this case, actually add to the initial loan pool that Minnesota Housing is already has in place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that, you. Going over those numbers. If we could have the next witness, and I know we have someone who has to leave, and
I believe Representative Mariani has a question of this witness.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark and Mr. McGee, and thank you for being here with us today, and thank you for working up a very, very thoughtful, comprehensive proposal. And so, full disclosure, my wife works in this area. She works for NIDA. And so I just wanted to get that on the record. But as I'm reading through this, I think, you know, particularly in that paragraph C in the second part, since I know her work, I think you're spot on in terms of all the elements that need to come together that can provide really empowering information and support and guidance for emerging communities in terms of home ownership. And so, I want to commend you on that. My very quick question, though, has to do with the last items, which speaks about jobs and employment readiness training resources and supporting wraparound services. And I think, members, I think what this reflects is sort of how this field is continuing to emerge in terms of its practice and understanding that in addition to all the spot-on things about, you know, credit mending, case management, home buyer education, et cetera, that we need much more, we also need to complement that with much more holistic processes that speak to the lives of these communities, which sets up their ability to be able to own a home. And so employment issues, wraparound services, et cetera. My quick question on this is, it seems to me that this sort of begs some level of coordination, perhaps, with at least two other State Departments, Economic Development, so DEED, Employment Economic Development, where you find a number of these services also being emerging, and then also perhaps with Department of Human Services, and so to be discussed further when we get fuller in the bill. But just a very quick your thoughts in terms of can these kind of services perhaps develop some really good synergies, and is it the intent to develop good synergies in collaboration with those two departments, at least, or perhaps others?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there's a group of a number of leaders of organizations that have the track record that are already in the process of putting together a business plan. Many of them are sitting on efforts with DEED, Everybody In, and a number of the other business development, entrepreneurship. And it's critical that this is wraparound and this is comprehensive, because it's just not about cleaning someone's credit to get them a house. It's really about getting them in a position to have adequate earnings to be able to sustain a house as well. So in this particular group with Clues and a number of others, we're not just doing this just for African Americans. We're trying to do this with all of the communities of color and bring those wraparound services that are critical, and make an alliance with DEED, Department of Human Services, which is where a number of our curriculums are coming out of. Mm-hmm. And so we're linking to every initiative that is already on the ground with what we're doing already to get the most bang for our buck, so to speak, in order to make this effective.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I think that, Mr. McGee, I just want to commend you on that. I think that's really good, strong, modern, next-generation thinking about how we can maximize, state resources and be much more effective with what we do, and not just limit ourselves to silos, if you will, in terms of meeting common needs. So thank you.
Thank you.
I believe we have one more comment. Representative Moran, did you have?
Thank you. And I'm going to echo Representative Mariani over there in regards to this bill, which I think is a really great bill when we talk about ending disparities. But not only in housing, Minnesota is known to have great disparities in jobs and also education. And when we use these wraparound services, we're not just sustaining families in their communities and homes, but we are creating better outcomes for families in general. Mm-hmm. And that really aligns with our educational goals to close those achievement gaps. So just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative. Yes. And we are doing that. We just thought that wraparound, just to piggyback on that, is that we just thought that we had to close the disparity gap in all areas. It can't just be about housing. Thus, the bill is home, housing opportunities made equitable. It's not equitable unless we're addressing all the other disparities for each of these homeowners, or renters, for that matter.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. Next, we have Kenneth
Thank you, Mr.
Scales.
Chair.
Please Good speak. Afternoon, Madam Chair and Acting Chair. My name is Kenneth Scales. I heard about Build Wealth Minnesota back in 2010. The best advertisement that I ever seen from a program was somebody that went through it before me. Well, my coworker went through Build Wealth Minnesota, and I've seen how much that it changed his life financially, with his children, all the wraparound resources that he has gotten. And I was like, wow, this is something that I want for my family as well. And so I enrolled in the program in 2010, and through the program, it taught me how to build wealth. It taught me how to budget, how to save money, and not only just for living for today or think about tomorrow, but also think about the future and the next generation. Growing up, my mom, I never grew up in a house. That was always one of my dreams, to grow up in a house. Growing up, we moved from apartment to apartment, state to state. And finally, when we moved here to Minnesota, I said, what more can I do for my community? And so going through Build Wealth allowed that for me to gain that access to the American dream. And I'm happy to say, sitting here as a homeowner as of 2012, and through all the stuff that I learned through Build Wealth Minnesota, got me better prepared to be a homeowner, to invest into my community. And one quick small story, I think it was last year, right around springtime, I was outside and I was raking the lawn, and I looked around, all my neighbors start to come outside, introduce themselves to me, and also they start raking their lawn. So I look at that, it's like, wow, this is great. And all the experience that I got through Build Wealth Minnesota, I became that advertisement.
I want more people that look like me, more people of color, to gain that access to the American dream. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And next we have Paul and Tamika Rhodes. Please introduce yourself for the record. Thank
you. Paul Rhodes. My wife Tamika is sitting over on the side. Madam Chair, Acting Chair, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the time to talk to you about House File 2112. From our point of view, this bill will help save families. Let me tell you how this will help. In 2005, we, like many other families, bought our first home, and like many other families, our home went into foreclosure because of predatory lending. The predatory lending caused our payments to skyrocket from $800 a month to $1,900 in 2008. We struggled to keep up with our payments the best we could, and we did so for about a year, but unfortunately, we couldn't continue. We were devastated. We felt betrayed, taken advantage of. We tried everything possible to save our home, but we just couldn't. Thankfully, we were not alone. Even though we lost our home, Build Wealth Minnesota helped prepare us for rental of a small apartment in hopes to get back on our feet. With everything that we learned in the program, like budgeting, building asset, it allowed us to be more intentional with our funds. Build Wealth Minnesota also assisted us with debt repair. In a matter of 2 years, it made it possible for us to buy another home, but this time much more educated and affordable. Not only did this program provide us with down payment assistance, it also helped save our marriage, our family. Recently, our oldest daughter talked to her mom and said, "Mom, do you remember how you and Dad used to always argue? How she was scared, but then she said she's not afraid anymore." That brought tears to her mom's eyes because she didn't realize how much the stress of our situation had impacted our children. So programs like this, educate and financial support in this House File 2112 is very similar to programs that gives families hope, joy, restoration, options to build a better future for our family. When we first lost our house, options to build better future for our families. When we thought we lost it all, now you have the power to give families hope, joy, and respite like they gave us. Thank you. We appreciate your time. Yeah.
Thank you. Inspiring stories. So, Representative Clark, you have some...
Mr. Chairman, as you note here on the agenda, we have a representative of each of the councils of color, and I'd like to give them each a moment or two to say a few words. And there will be an amendment that we'll put on this bill when we bring it back, which is on page one, and it just basically advises the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to consult with these councils. I'm not going to put that on right now today, Mr. Chairman, but I guess if we could start. I think, Melanie Plachinski, do you need to go? I think we have some... Okay. I guess your predecessor needed to go, but welcome. Okay. You can explain it.
Good afternoon. My name is Melanie Pazinski. I'm the Legislative Director of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. I'm speaking on behalf of the council today and also on behalf of Anna Marie Hill, who had to leave a bit earlier. The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council acknowledges the multiple benefits of home ownership and also the persistent disparities in home ownership that exist among racial and ethnic minorities in the state. We're very familiar with the need that exists. As Stu mentioned earlier, more than 70% of the white...
Can you speak into the microphone a little bit?
Yeah. More than 70% of the white...
Can you speak into the microphone a little bit? Yeah, thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry. While more than 75% of the non-Hispanic white population in Minnesota owned a home, only 47% of American Indians were homeowners. Currently, nearly 1 in 5 people experiencing homelessness in Greater Minnesota are American Indians, while they represent only 2 out of 100 in the general population. A 2009 Wilder study presents evidence and reports that 35% of homeless or near homeless American Indian study respondents were on a wait list for public housing, a housing voucher, or some other type of housing that offers financial assistance. These respondents were also asked what prevents them from getting or keeping housing. Their most frequent answers included,
a lack of job or income, no housing that they can afford, credit problems, and criminal history. The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council has not yet requested support of this bill from its full board. We do invite someone or an expert on the bill to come and speak to our board on March 4th at the Crown Plaza at 1 p.m. of next week. But the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, as an agency, does support the bill and proposal as long as that it does not threaten to reduce public housing or other related assistance in any way.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I believe now the Council on Black Minnesotans, I think Al Flowers is going, or, no? Ed McDonough, or Al Flowers, both of you? How are we doing this?
I'm going to just make a brief comment.
Okay.
And then,
okay.
In our tradition, we have one of our community reps speak as well.
Perfect.
Madam Chair, Acting Chair, members of this great committee, thank you very much for hearing this bill. The Excuse Council on Black Minnesotans, my name
yourself.
Is Edward McDonald, Executive Director of the Council on Black Minnesotans. Our council board have endorsed this legislative bill. Our staff have worked very close with Bill Wealth in its development. I won't go through all the stats. You've heard those. 23% home ownership rate in the African-American community. We want our community less transient. It is the key and the foundation for the development of families, family units, wealth, job opportunities, the American dream. And everything about this program fits into the essence of Minnesota. The great state it is, we have to put this in place so that we can grow more home ownership. And we urge you to support this bill.
Thank you.
In our tradition, we also like to have a member of our community speak for themselves as well.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Al Flowers, a 35-year resident in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a community activist. And I want to say in support of the bill, but to say this to the committee as I will be following it, I've seen things happen in our community, in the African-American community, whether it's NSP funds or whatever, and it never gets down to our community. So I'm talking about oversight, making sure that we got the right oversight to the people that everybody that's gotten up here speaking for us, telling these feel-good stories. You can get them all the time. But I see the damage what's happening in our community about home ownership. I'm working with Commissioner Tingenthal with a collaborative in Minneapolis of the Urban League, Summit Academy, Turning Point, Emerge, Urban Homework, City of Lake Community Land Trust. We're working on something to really figure out what's happening in these poor communities. So I would tell this committee, and I'm going to follow this because I know it's got to go to the Senate too to get passed. It can come through here, but you still got to go to the Senate. Mm-hmm. And I would tell this, and I will support it as long as it's transparent and open. Because when I say that because I'm as a activist in the community. And when you don't know everything about this bill should have been out in the community so we can discuss it. I do a radio on KMOJ. I do a TV show on MTN. And I should be able to tell the community in Minneapolis this is what's happening. I don't care what color you are. I'm about our community and fighting for people that, who's been disadvantaged. And I've been doing that a long time. So I say this to this committee. I say this to David McGee. I say this to Ed McDonald. I will follow this from here on out, and we've been working with Commissioner Tingenthal about figuring out what's really going to help in these poor communities, and I thank you for this opportunity to get up and speak, and you'll see me again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have Sia Herb. Is that right?
Next, I believe, Hector Garcia. Or go ahead, sure. Oh, see her. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair,
and respective committee members. Good afternoon. My name is Sia Her. I am the executive director at the State Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Our agency is actually the one that is going to be proposing an amendment to this bill, and so I'm here to speak to that point. The Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, which we also call CAPM for short, recognizes the advocacy behind House File 2112. We further recognize and appreciate that this is a very serious effort to help close the home ownership gaps. And I say gaps, and I'll elaborate on why I use gaps versus gap. We respectfully submit that in the past, the traditional organizations that have been authorized to assist culturally diverse groups were more connected to relatively mainstream communities of color. Now, the councils of color, for example, CAPM, the Council on Black Minnesotans, Chicano Latino, we are more connected to the emerging communities. And I heard Representative Mariani use that frame earlier. This is really important because in the Asian American community, we have communities such as the Karen, the Karenni, who most Minnesotans, and I am pretty sure all public officials, do not know who they are. And yet they constitute a significant number within our Asian Pacific Islander community. Also, we have the Hmong, the Somali, other African groups, and many of the Latino groups that come here from places other than Mexico and Puerto Rico. Specifically, Minnesota is home to the second largest Hmong community in the country. We number at close to 70,000, according to the 2010 census. Minnesota is also home to the largest Karen population outside of Southeast Asia. Right now, we are hearing that community is estimated at about 10,000, and it is increasing at an exponential rate due to secondary and tertiary migration. With the scope, complexity, and depth of our communities, our diverse communities' needs, we at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans believe that the Council's input is crucial. As a representative for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, I would like to propose an amendment to House File 2112 in paragraph B, lines 1.4 through 1.5, so that it would read as follows. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, in collaboration with the State Advisory Councils of Color, and then it reads on. If the goal of this legislation is to support closing the housing gaps for all of our diverse communities, our council believes that the councils of color provide a unique lens that will help recipients of this legislation not only achieve home ownership but sustain it. The many challenges facing new homeowners are often magnified and intensified in our emerging communities. We believe that the councils are the most, at this point in time, the most culturally relevant government agencies that we have in the state of Minnesota, and when we don't include them, we are limiting the range and the scope of any legislation that's specifically targeting diverse communities, as you have seen very explicitly noted in this House file. It is not the job of the four councils to act as spokespersons for all of our communities, but as Minnesota currently exists, our councils, if we are properly utilized, should significantly increase the likelihood that the goals of this legislation will be more equitably and broadly accomplished. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you the perspective of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans today, and if you have any questions, I would be more than happy to take them.
Thank you, Ms. Her. My understanding is we won't take any action on the amendment today, but thank you for presenting your perspective on it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Any questions? Thank you.
Yeah, I think we have one more.
Hector Garcia.
Good afternoon. I'm Hector Garcia, the executive director of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, acting Chair Bly and Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. I was thinking that I perhaps should mention that I used to be the Vice President of Emerging Markets, both domestic and international, in private client services for Wells Fargo Bank. And so I share Representative Herstow's concern with the secondary market, and I'd just like to add to that perhaps we should try not to strain the gnat and swallow the camel, because the housing bubble and the consequences that it had on our community and other communities was what caused and brought about all the need for minor corrections such as the ones that are being considered here today. So I'd rather prefer to suggest that we focus on the upside. You know, what can we do to engage these marginalized members of our communities so that they can be productive contributors to Minnesota society? And I feel that that calls for encouragement, for inspiration, for clarity in the way mortgage loans are handled, for proper mediation when there are problems, and for access to funding when necessary. You know, you've seen all of the statistics of Minnesota having the worst gaps in the nation, not only in housing, unfortunately, but also in education, in health, and in other areas. And with the growing populations in the minority communities, this is not a threat for us only, nor for the people who don't have a home or are losing their home. It's a threat to the whole state. And if you look, for example, at the average ranking for Minnesota in comparison to the national ranking in education, you'll see that it's already happening. So I believe that we can encourage these individuals who are low income, who have the potential to contribute, to find out how to best do it and to support them along the way. When I was with Wells Fargo, Latino investors in Latin America were the largest market that we had in the whole world. So obviously, Latinos have the capacity to contribute heavily to Minnesota and to the United States. They have currently, those high net worth individuals that I was just referring to, over $2 trillion in assets invested in the U.S., and they send $100 billion to the U.S. every year. So it's a long stretch to go from the individuals that we're talking about right now, but it can be done if only we focus on their potential rather than on compassion alone. And so I would encourage the committee to consider that upside potential and see how we can all work together to make it happen, not only for the benefit of the Latino and other minority communities, but for the whole state of Minnesota. I'd like to invite the head of CLUS, the largest Latino organization in the state, Ruby Lee, to say a few words, if I may, and I thank the committee for listening to my comments.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name again is Ruby Lee. I'm president of CLUS, which stands for Latino Communities United in Service. Our agency has been around for over 33 years. Today I wanted to just share a little bit of my own story as an immigrant. I come from Guatemala, moved to Minnesota 33 years ago. At the age of 24, as a young Latina, and I married an American, I'm a Minnesotan, I worked for the state of Minnesota, so I had employment for several years. And at the age of 24, I wanted to purchase my first home. And when I did that, I went to apply, and they told me, you can't. And I said, what do you mean I can't? Well, you don't have credit. You don't have a history of credit in this country. And I said, well, I was raised in a way that, you know, if you don't owe money, that's what you aim to do, right? Not to owe money. So that piece of acculturation of coming here and finding a new culture and a new expectation of economic advancement, it just didn't really fit within the culture that I was raised on.
And I bring that story to you because there was also a loan that the loan system for first-time home buyers that the state of Minnesota was offering at the time. And I had to learn how to go open my first credit card. I was denied for those credit cards. Initially, and even though I had employment from the state, again, there were a lot of barriers that I think the system and the expectations built. And so I experienced on my own through opportunities like first-time home buyers that the Minnesota Housing Department offered. I was able to then achieve my goal. So part of what we do at Clues is to help, even though we've been around 33 years, we serve over 10,000 people a year, many of them new immigrants, many of them not just Latinos, but others through ESL programs and so forth. And we are family-centric focused. We think very holistically. We provide from the gamut all the areas of health all the way to employment, economic advancement, and asset building. But part of the work that we do is really to help our clients be consumer-ready, be ready to receive and to access those opportunities that are already existent. A bill of like this one really will help us enhance our services. There are many groups around the state of Minnesota that are asking us for assistance. We do provide services mostly in the Twin Cities area. Don't have the resources to go to greater Minnesota where people need some coaching. Part of the work that we do centers around financial coaching. You know, those opportunities to really help our new immigrants in particular understand how to access the services that are available to them. They are consumers, they have the money, they have the means to sustain the purchase of a home, but understanding and really meeting all those steps that are required to do so are part of what we do. We help them access credit building ladders. In this case, we have an innovative program, in fact, that we are producing and offering right now regarding access to capital and access to credit. Through peer lending circles, we are able to have people-to-people helping each other and providing some funding, very small, and we try to provide the matching dollars through these peer lending circles. We then take the money that is taken through those savings circles and report it to the credit bureau, the movement of borrowing and paying, we report it to the credit bureau, and that helps people move faster in the credit building ladder system. So it's very innovative, it's working really well, and these are the types of services that we could provide in addition to debt repair and other financial opportunities for them. So I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. I believe Representative Metza, you had a question or comment you want?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One just quick comment. I think in particular in this committee, I'm continually impressed, Madam Chair, by the testifiers you're able to get, and I wanted to just thank them for being willing to share your stories publicly. I think that's important. I know it can be hard to do, so we just thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's really the witness I wanted to bring. I believe there might be, I'm not sure if we have any time left. We have to be out of here in a few minutes. So I thank the committee for allowing us to have this testimony today. I believe when we bring the bill back, we probably will ask the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to discuss their take on this, too. As was pointed out earlier, they have kind of launched this with the first $10 million that they were able to put together based on what we asked them to do last session. So I think we look forward to a good, hopefully some progress, depending on what we get for our target. So
all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Yes, thank you, Representative Clark, and your bill will be laid over for a later consideration. And
thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
I think maybe just the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, okay.
We did.
All right.
Okay.
Representative Hertog.
Thank you. I just wanted to also, as Representative Metza said, make praise for the testimony of the folks that have come forward. It really is important, as I mentioned earlier, to encourage home ownership. And Representative Clark and myself share a common background in the nursing profession where they teach you about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That being, you know, oxygen is the most prepotent thing to life and progresses up this triangle all the way to self-actualization at the very top of it. And during the course of my career, I've built hundreds of homes and have sold a lot of property. And I've sold a lot of homes to people of color. And I just, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I see a common thread to home ownership. And what all of these buyers have in common is a good education, a good job, double income, a strong family, a nuclear family, and the ability for them to take care of themselves. And that's the direction that we want to be going. So that certainly is encouraging. And with regard to the last testifier talking about Latino and Guatemalan tendency to not want to have debt and having to learn a whole new thing, that's not necessarily bad. It shows good judgment in terms of not taking on more than you can handle. And in the mortgage industry, going back maybe prior to the housing bubble that we recently all experienced, I had a mortgage lender comment to me how easy it was to get Latinos approved because of all the applicants, even including white, they tended to save their money. They had cash. They saved it. They had it on hand. They qualified for mortgages. And when you look at this sheet that was in our packet of information, you know, it showed among the minority groups as Latinos having a higher percentage of home ownership, probably amongst groups of color. So that just may be a little bit of a testimonial to one of the characteristics of the culture and saving money and working towards the future. So it's a tangled web we live in, and all of these things are interrelated. Achievement gap, education, jobs, economic employment, taxes, creating a good environment for people to have opportunity, not causing entrepreneurs and job creators to leave our state. All of those things are things that we've been talking about this last year, and they're all interrelated.
All right, thank you very much.
And my second comment is I will move to approve the minutes of April 5th and January 29th.
We had a quorum.
Do we have a quorum? All right.
We did. Okay, I'm being told by my staff up here that since we do no longer have a quorum, I guess we can't quite do that, so I guess we'll have to hold it. Thank you for the intention, right, though. you'll do the next one.
All right.
Thank you.
With that, we are adjourned.